Good morning. It's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Joining me in the studio this morning, I have a couple of guests. Michelle Putz from the Sitka Global Warming Group is here. Hi,
good
Michelle.
Good morning.
And you've brought with you Dr. Jeremy Mathis from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And Jeremy, I didn't even sort of go over your formal title, but you're a chemical oceanography researcher.
That's right. I study the chemistry of the oceans.
All right. And you're the scariest man I know.
I hope not.
Hopefully. Nice guy, but interesting, serious topic this week. Michelle, it's sort of been Ocean Acidification Week, and it started last night with a movie, A Sea Change.
A movie, A Sea Change. It's a full-length movie that is about an older gentleman who wants to show his grandson or tell him about the future that he's leaving him, and it's kind of a scary future.
Was it pretty well attended?
It was well attended, probably 65 to 80 people there, a nice full room, and we'd like to pack the house tonight at Centennial Hall.
Okay, because tonight Jeremy is actually going to give a presentation on ocean acidification itself. Yeah. And I thought I'd ask you, Jeremy, we'd just sort of go back to the beginning, how carbon in the atmosphere becomes, how does it become acid in the ocean? How are the problems related?
Well, the ocean and atmosphere exist in this equilibrium where anything that we put into the atmosphere winds up in the ocean. And so for a while, the ocean has been taking up a portion of this extra CO2 that we've been putting in the atmosphere from stuff like driving our cars and from changes in land use practices. And that has done a service to the atmosphere in the fact that it's mitigated this greenhouse warming. It's kept the temperatures sort of lower than what they would naturally have been had the ocean not been doing this service. But what we've seen over time, particularly over the last 30 or 40 years, is this, as the CO2 sort of accumulates in the surface ocean, it drastically changes the chemistry. It lowers the pH. As that CO2 molecule sort of dissolves into the surface ocean, it turns into carbonic acid, which is why things like soda, like the Coke that you drink, is acidic and is bad for your teeth, because it has that dissolved carbon dioxide in it that turns into something called carbonic acid, and that lowers the pH of that water.
And carbonic acid is, at some point, it becomes corrosive to certain kinds of shell building.
That's exactly right. At a certain pH threshold, the minerals that are in the water that these shell-building organisms use to create those shells are not available anymore. They start to come out of solution. And so that can have sort of the effect of, in the early stages, it becomes harder and harder for a shell-building organism to build its shell. Its rate of calcification starts to drop. And if those pHs get to the point to where they're completely undersaturated, where those minerals aren't available at all anymore, then the water can be corrosive to existing shells. So coral reefs or clams or lobsters or tiny little pteropods out in the ocean, that water can actually start to break down their shells very quickly.
And so suddenly this becomes, it's a chemical issue, but it's rapidly becoming a food chain issue.
Absolutely. And that's the big sort of unanswered question right now is how are these changes that we're observing going to cascade into the food web? That something simple like a pteropod, this tiny little calcifier that's about the size of a fingernail, you remove it from the ecosystem and it makes up about 50% of the diet of pink salmon, and so which has been clearly a staple industry, particularly in Alaska. So removing a fundamental sort of base of the food pyramid can have serious consequences as we move up to these more commercially viable species.
So part of the reason, Jeremy, I introduced you, tongue-in-cheek, as one of the scariest guys I know, is that when people consider climate change and global warming, we talk about it in a scale that seems manageable. The temperature is rising a half a degree every decade or whatever, and it's still sort of hard to pin it down. But the measurements of ocean acidification and the amount of carbon that the ocean is absorbing is fairly basic science. These numbers are not hard to measure. We've been getting the data for some time now, and the data is really disturbing about how quickly the pH level is changing in the ocean.
Correct? Well, that's exactly right, that we're seeing this acceleration, that CO2 levels in the atmosphere are rising exponentially, which means every year the rate of change is increasing more and more. And so ocean acidification is a much more definitively quantifiable measurement, that it doesn't take as many years. We can see significant changes over one decade as opposed to one century, where a lot of the warming conversation is. And so while a half a degree increase in Celsius over 100 years might not resonate with people as much as it should, if you tell them that in the next 20 years, our major calcifying organisms in this part of Alaska could be under severe threat, then that has a much more illicit response to it.
Yeah, let's talk about northern waters for a moment. I think in climate change in general, we've made a case that in Arctic areas in Alaska and the polar regions, evidence of climate change or the impact of climate change is becoming noticeable earlier on. Is the same true with ocean acidification? Are the effects more noticeable in the northern or southern regions?
Absolutely. The colder the water, the more carbon dioxide it can hold. And the more carbon dioxide it can hold, the lower the pH is going to be. So the polar oceans are absolutely ground zero for ocean acidification. So the Southern Ocean down off of Antarctica, and then our continental shelves here, the Gulf of Alaska, the Bering Sea, and to probably the largest extent, the Arctic Ocean, are going to be those areas that become undersaturated or, you know, corrosive to the shell-building organisms first, compared to the tropics and the subtropical environment. So our cold water and the cold environment that we have up here is definitely sort of exacerbating the problem of ocean acidification.
Wow. Okay. So, I guess. I did have one other question about sequestration before we move on to if there's an upside to this at all, because we don't want to leave people, you know, feeling, you know, just terrible this morning. But in discussions and policy discussions about ways to deal with the increased amounts of carbon dioxide that human activity is putting into the atmosphere, one solution has been to, you know, to capture the carbon that's going out smokestacks from power plants and sequestering it in the ocean. Based on what I'm hearing you say right now, that sounds like it's not a good idea.
It's not. We certainly don't want to be doing that in the surface ocean. And when I say surface ocean, I mean the upper 1,500 or 2,000 feet of the ocean. We don't want to be putting any extra carbon in there. Now, if we could find a way to lock this carbon away into the very deep ocean, where the pHs are naturally low, where these processes that we're seeing up here in the surface ocean would sort of naturally happen, then that could be an option. So the technologies are going to continue to develop around the studies that we're doing. But the message that people need to take home is it's a CO2 problem. So the more you can reduce CO2 emissions, the more we can develop renewable energies and green energies that don't create carbon dioxide, the more time we're going to buy ourselves to sort of find a solution to deal with the problems that we're facing.
And we can't treat the ocean like a big swimming pool and just start pouring baking soda in?
Unfortunately, no. You would need, you'd need to involve several mountain ranges, the Himalayas and the Alps and probably the Rocky Mountains. You'd need to dissolve all the mountain ranges of the world back into the ocean, because that's what's going to naturally happen over time, over millions of years, over the geologic time scale. That weathering and the breaking down of those rocks on land will naturally return that buffering capacity to the ocean and will cause the pH to come back up again. But that's not going to happen on human timescales. We're talking about millions and millions of years.
So, Jeremy, you're going to be talking more about this tonight at 6:30.
I am.
Harrigan Centennial Hall, and ocean acidification and its impacts on Alaska. And then, Michelle, you have kind of planned another session tomorrow. It was last night the movie, tonight's Jeremy's presentation on acidification.
Right.
And then tomorrow something positive.
We want to give people lots of opportunities to get an education out of this, but also, these things are disturbing. These are things that are going to, you know, they threaten the livelihood of everyone connected to fishing. Everyone in Sitka and everyone along, you know, every coastline should be concerned about this. So what we are doing on Thursday night at 7 at Harrigan Centennial Hall is having a community action meeting. So we'll talk about four different projects that we're doing in Sitka where people can do something directly to reduce their carbon footprint, reduce how much carbon dioxide they're putting in the air, and then also do a brainstorming session so that if we want to do a community action plan, we can do that. I'd love to see people come and say, you know, I'd like to take some political action, because I think switching to renewable energy, certainly, you know, supporting what Sitka is already doing for renewable energy and convincing our state and federal, you know, politicians to put money towards renewable energy is where we have to go. It's just where we have to do it. So, we're happy to do it. We're sponsoring this with several other folks. Sitka Global Warming Group, we were the first ones to call Jeremy and very excited when he said yes. Sitka Conservation Society, Sitka Sound Science Center, which of course makes sense, and UAS and UAF. So it's been a good partnership. I'm glad we've been able to pull this together.
Well, it's an interesting topic, and I can tell just the way Jeremy has kind of engaged us just in these few minutes that tonight's presentation is probably going to be
And one thing, too, we'll have the presentation and a little bit of time for questions and answers, which I think is helpful, you know, to get people more involved in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll be tonight. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Jeremy Mathis, UAF Chemical Oceanography Researcher, has been in with me this morning, along with Michelle Putz from the Sitka Global Warming Group. They'll be at a presentation tonight at Harrigan Centennial Hall, 6:30, on ocean acidification and its impacts on Alaska. And then tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., also at Harrigan Centennial Hall, Michelle, the Sitka Global Warming Group and some of these other folks will be working with the community on brainstorming ways to actively combat this problem. Thanks again to both of you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.